It's nice to see people early after lunch. It's coming up to 14:20, which is about to start. I really don't think I need an introduction, but I will give an introduction to Colin Priest, who's going to talk about AI actuaries in education. And Colin's bio states that Colin is an actuary stroke data scientist, marketeer, communicator, educator, who has held several CEO and general management roles, where he has championed data-driven initiatives in financial services, healthcare, security, oil and gas, government and marketing. With a passion for how humans and AIs can work together, Colin has contributed to Singapore government projects on AI ethics, AI governance, and the future of work. Colin strongly supports the science of healthcare and does pro bono work for cancer research. Despite having more than 20 years of experience in educating actuaries, Colin is still learning about learning. I would just like to add to his bio, Colin has kindly just... It's finishing with the Actuaries Institute this week. Colin, for the last year, has been...
Next week.
Next week, is it?
Yeah, I get another week work of pay, thanks.
It's another paid week I'll get into.
Because we've got the ESC meeting on Monday.
Good, sorry. So he's been teaching our data science application subjects for the last year and helping Amanda, who's taken back over with many ideas on AI. Now he's gone off to the UNSW to do some teaching.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so this won't just be me talking. There is an interactive fun part later on. There's going to be two exercises where I'm going to get you to do, so you'll need your mobile phones when we get to that bit, which is about halfway through the slide deck. As Mike was saying, I have a background that includes education for at least 20 years now as a side gig, and for the last year has been my main type of employment. And that spans from university all the way up to the very last subject that people do to qualify as a fellow. Which does not mean, as Mike was saying, that I'm an expert on all of this. I'm still learning. I always find it funny as senior actuaries, I don't have to do that. The younger guys will do it. Hell no. You need to keep learning this. If you're not, you're going to become obsolete and AI is going to replace you. Right, here we go. Right, the challenge. I probably don't have to convince you that there's a challenge when it comes to AI and education. Almost everyone I speak to on this topic comes up with, but the students are just going to get AI to do all their assignments for them. How will they ever learn anything? So let's start with a bit of theoretical framework around this. There is a thing called Bloom's taxonomy. It's been around since roughly the mid-20th century or so. It's got six levels in it. It's not meant to be a journey, although many educators mistakenly treat it that it has to be round that way. But it often is round that way. Many times you need to build the basics before you can get up to the advanced. You can't do calculus until you've done algebra, for example. That makes sense. One builds on the other, but you don't always have to. But if we have a look at these things, I'm going to simplify it for the rest of the presentation for multiple reasons. One is this is the way the Actuaries Institute looks at it. They split it up into three because it's just too much detail getting into six steps. The other is that it makes the slides easier to look at and read. So I'm a bit of a pragmatist. So let's just stick to this level here. And we've got three levels of things. First is just knowledge, your basic knowledge. Now, can you acquire, retain, and recall information? Do you know what a discount rate is? That's basic actuarial knowledge. Can you remember what that is? Yeah. And you need that sort of stuff to do later things. The next level along is comprehension. This is more than memorization. This is when you start to internalize that knowledge. When you're able to put things into your own words or start to think about what it actually means rather than what it says. And at the top level, what you've got is application. And I don't just mean following a bunch of procedures. I mean using that knowledge to solve problems or critically analyze a situation and break it down into something. So, you know, it makes sense. This is a hierarchy as you build up. As you go up, it requires higher and higher order skills of thinking. Unfortunately, along comes AI. knowledge. We didn't even need AI for that. We can Google it. All right, there goes the idea of memorizing things for many people. Comprehension. Ah, ChatGPT, summarize this document. I use that all the time, by the way, partly because I'm lazy, although officially it's because my eyesight is going and I need to just not strain my eyes. Highest level. Hey, ChatGPT, solve this problem for me. I do that as well, by the way, although I show a fair bit more skepticism over that level than I do over the summarize a document level. Because, and that's just more because of the way the current generation works. It is much better at summarizing a document than solving a complex problem. It's an easier problem to solve. But if at a naive level, all these things are dead, what can we do about this? We, you know, universities don't want to pump out graduates that got straight A's and know nothing. The Actuaries Institute doesn't want to give fellowships out to people that can't be trusted to do anything if their computer's down. So should we ban AI in education? I'm old. I'd like to think I'm older than I look and younger than I feel. I'm old enough to remember when calculators were banned at school, and I hated it. They made us use log tables, and I'd make mistakes because I'd line it up wrong, because the log tables were really complex tables and you had to look it all up. And if I made a mistake, it wasn't because I didn't understand what I was doing. It was because I lined the damn things up wrong. I absolutely hated it. And teachers fought against calculators. Calculators are going to stop kids from ever learning maths. What a load of garbage. The research has shown that since the introduction of calculators, students have actually been able to do more advanced maths than they did before because we took away the annoying part and the cognitive load and freed up their brains to get onto what maths actually is, which is solving problems, not doing bloody calculations. Universities. Now, I love how the media puts everything as a scare story. So I've got two totally opposite scare stories here. I've got 71% of Australian university staff are using AI, so why are they banning it? On the other hand, I've got stories about how they're raising ethical objections to AI. We've got this cognitive dissonance happening, certainly at the university level, where depending on what question you ask them, they're either for or against AI. We're struggling with this question. And there's this potential disconnect if we take the easy way out, which is to ban AI. If we're the university and we're saying, no, AI is cheating, and I've seen that word used by a number of my colleagues across multiple universities. I've worked for more than one university in the last year, so I'm not giving away who's saying this. They call it cheating. On the other hand, you get into employment, you're expected to do it. You're expected to be productive. If you refuse to use a tool and do it the old-fashioned slow way, you're going to get sacked. We have this disconnect. Once again, we're producing graduates or fellows who no one wants to hire. Why would you want to hire someone that wants to do things? Why would you want to hire someone that refuses to use Excel, for example, or a calculator? No way, I'm using my log tables or my slide rule. You hit the hell no. So, brief diversion. What the hell is an actuary then? Let's start. And I think of it in terms of three sort of skill sets here. We've got domain knowledge. And this is very heavily in financial service. It does not have to be, by the way. I've been having debates with people in the last 24 hours. How the hell do we get the world to recognize that actuaries would be really good in data science? And one of the biggest problems is we're so heavily anchored in financial services that people don't think we can solve anything else. Now, it's not true. We can and have been. But our education goes this way. Our accreditation goes this way. And we think this way. We've got to move out of this. But we build up domain knowledge. The next thing is the technical. We spend a ton of time learning all this technical stuff. You know, we start with some maths and stats. We do some basic economics. We gradually build up into finance and risk management. I put coding and software there. I've got to say, oh, most actuaries I've met cannot code for a million years. I don't think I'm a great coder and I can run rings around them. I would never put anything I write into production. And yet I know from the DSA course, something that took me 3 hours took more than 100 hours for one of my students. And it's like, oh, my goodness. And we don't teach enough coding and software, by the way. But we're no room for it because we're too busy teaching all this other stuff. And data management, that's something we increasingly need to know, and yet we don't really teach much about. But anyway, it's still part of our skill set. Most people tend to learn those last few ones more on the job than in their education. And then there's the damn people skills, which we'd love to forget, but we're stuck with. Can you communicate? Can you manage the stakeholders? Ethics? Oh, yeah, okay. Leadership? Yeah, because I want to be a boss someday. You get more money for that. Teamwork? Yeah, stuck with that. And negotiation and persuasion. How the hell am I going to convince marketing that these premiums are reasonable? We don't get taught much of that, but it is very much essential to what an actuary does. And we do examine it, even though we don't teach it much. We've got all these case study exams where these things come into it, and all of a sudden the students are going, why am I failing? And they go, there's people involved, have a think about that. So we've got that. And while we're talking about people, the code very specifically says that an actuary is a person, a natural person. It can't be a company even. An actuarial advice can only come from an actuary, and an actuary must be a person. It cannot be an AI. So don't expect to see AI actuaries anytime in the near future. It actually goes against the ethics and professionalism of the Institute. And the other actuarial societies around the world have similar sort of definitions out there. So we've made it clear that an actuary is a human and they've got a certain set of skills. It reminds me of a movie, I've Got a Certain Set of Skills. Once again, we're into mortality again when we talk about those skills. Is AI relevant to actuaries? I'm going to go through this incredibly quickly because there's been other presentations already this week on this. Ton of stuff in insurance. I picked red just for ones I just want to quickly mention that I know are happening. I know in Australia that there are actuaries using AI to get through reinsurance contract administration because those things are so complex. They want to categorise. Does it have this clause in it? Does it have that clause in it? Banking. Banks are very heavily investing in LLMs at the moment. Customer sentiment analysis. Yeah, dealing with this unstructured data, LLMs are superb at turning unstructured data into structured data. Superannuation. I had someone I went to uni with, I hadn't been in touch with for 20 years, got in touch with me last month. They do superannuation audits and they want to use LLMs to check that the scheme reports include the compliance requirement clauses in them. She's got a team of almost a dozen people that literally do this all the time, and it's boring as. They've got better things to do with their time than to check whether a particular paragraph is in a report. You can automate this. Investment. You can extract information automatically from those company reports and you write the right prompts and you can do that at scale. Data science. As you would expect, data scientists love using AI. And in fact, we teach some of this. I teach people to use LLMs to generate the Python and the R scripts that they use for their analysis. Given how bad actuaries are at coding, even the dodgy code coming out of LLMs tends to be better and faster than the stuff coming out of the actuaries. It's also good for debugging. I've got to say, I love LLMs for debugging because I've got that cognitive bias. I wrote the code. It looks right to me. Why is the answer wrong? Give it to an LLM. Tell it either where the answer is wrong or what the error message is, and it gives me an independent view of what I've done. And it's always something that I just had this block on, and the moment I said, I go, oh, yeah. So, yeah, great for that. And there's regulatory use cases. I hate regulatory and compliance work. I'd love to automate as much of that as possible. Where can we use this in education? This is really what I want to focus on the most, though. We worry a lot about, are students going to cheat with AI? But we're worrying about the wrong question here. The real question should be, how can we get the best education outcomes for the people we're looking after? How can we bring them out to be able to think critically, to be able to think clearly, to be able to act ethically and professionally? Can we use AI to help us? Well, back to the simplified taxonomy. We've got knowledge. We can use AI to help students get that knowledge and understand that knowledge. So one of the things I've already done is I use AI to redesign the slides that I use for lectures. I inherited a course that I teach for commerce students and had been written by an actuary for actuaries. The first lecture is 90 pages of maths. I taught it last year, and I had a dozen of the commerce students going, and they literally said, I think I've signed up for the wrong course. And I'm going, yeah, I can see why you think that. I can put a slide deck into AI. I tell them who I'm teaching to, and I ask it to critique and give me suggestions on how to improve a slide deck. And it is so good at telling me where the narrative is pitched the wrong way, where there's not enough narrative, where I've got too many words, I don't have visualizations, and it can help me do that. Now, I can't draw for anything. Thank goodness AI can make images for me as well. Mnemonics. If you're a student, you've got to memorize certain things. There's tools for that. You know, you use acronyms, for example. So, you know, when you remember the assumptions behind linear regressions, there's an acronym called LINE. You know, is it linear? Is it independent? Is it normal? Is it endogenous? You know, that's what we call a mnemonic. You can get AI to generate new mnemonics for you for whatever topic you want. And it will help you memorize things, which helps you connect, because the way your brain works is not like a computer. Your brain doesn't just store things, it connects things. So you remember things better when they're connected to something you already know or something intuitive. I'm going to skip over that one for the moment. I'd much rather, there's a couple that are more fun for you to play with than the mnemonics one. Next level up, comprehension. This is about understanding and putting things in your own words. This is the point where it goes from mindlessly memorizing something to understanding something, to internalizing something. For teachers, one of the things I've got to experiment with is I've started experimenting with getting AI to simulate stakeholders. It's very good at pretending to be human because it's trained on human behavior to replicate it. I want to start getting experiments where I get students to play with a stakeholder and explain something to them. I've got a variant of that later that I'm going to show you. For students, explain it like I'm 5, or explain it like I'm 10, or the appropriate level for where you're at. I do this with my colleagues' papers because I don't understand them. They're clearly smarter than me. And it's like, what is this section about? I do not understand. Explain it to me like I'm 5. And then when I get that, I go, okay, now I'm 15. Explain to me like I'm 15. I'm starting to get it now. This is particularly good for students. They'll get mental blocks on certain things. Explain this to me. And you can have they can have an interactive conversation. Put the notes in and get it to explain it to you. I'm going to skip over that example, but here's the first one I want you to play with. Here's a bit of fun for you. Pull out your mobile phone, pull up the QR code, and go ahead. I'm going to give you a few minutes to play with this. It's going to ask you for, in your own words, explain what an actuary is. Write about a paragraph or so. And if you're in this room and you don't know how to answer that question, are you at the right conference? So what it's asking you for, can you explain what an actuary is, what they do, where they work? Hopefully by now most of you guys can put a few sentences together. And the idea is to put this into your own words. But if you ask it later on, it'll give you the option of clicking on there and it'll give you its definition. It has a few in there. It has the one from the Actuaries Institute. It has the SOA one. It has the IFOA one. What it will do, though, is if you cheat and Google the definition and paste it in, it's going to tell you that wasn't in your own words. It's forcing you to put it in your own words, and it's going to give you some helpful feedback, and you can iterate if you want. You can have another go at it. Anybody got to the point where it's given them any feedback yet? Circle. It's processing away. It's on a very low-powered server. It's probably getting overloaded by having 50 people at once trying to use it. This is what happens when the server budget comes out of my pocket rather than my employer's. So one of the beauties of AI is that it'll individualize. It's very hard to individualize at scale, and there's this great opportunity for AI to adapt to where a student is at, to basically be a personal tutor. Even at university, we have tutoring, but like we had extra people sign up this term for the course I'm teaching, and it's like I had to give it permission for the tutorials to be bigger groups, and I've got almost 30 people in a tutorial now. It's very hard to give individual attention when you've got 30 people and one tutor in just an hour to help them. Now, setting this up wasn't trivial. I had to prompt it. I had to give it the information. It had to know what exactly I wanted the answer to look like and what made one answer better than another. Has it liked anybody's answers yet? Yeah, someone's got a good answer down the back. That's good. I know the first time I did it and I built it and I knew what it was expecting, I still didn't score well. I gave too brief an answer. And it's, it said to me, well, that's a part of the answer. You haven't caught some of the other aspects. And then I thought, I'll cheat. And I go, give me the answer. I pasted it in and it recognized that I'd cheated. It said, you're supposed to do this in your own words. I'll give it one more minute and then we'll move on a bit. We've got an even more fun one coming up. I can see by how much attention people are paying to their phones that they're either truly enjoying this or they're on social media chatting to one of their friends. It is quite engaging because you're being engaged by the AI as a person, not as just a mere member of a group, and it's adapting to exactly what you said. We're built as humans to interact at that level. And it's fun. It's like playing a game. The more we can gamify education, the better. That's how kids learn. Kids and kittens, the same. They learn by playing games. Even adults, I still learn by playing games. All right, I'm going to move on. Top level here, application. This is a solving problems or analyzing situations. How can AI help us with this? The one in red is one I've already experimented with in first term this year at the uni. Ask students to explain a recommendation to an AI stakeholder simulation. So I had one of my colleagues teaches a risk management course, and he had a bunch of 20 different historical risk scenarios. Things like the Enron collapse, things like there was environmental ones, there was fraud, and we had different stakeholders within that you could present to. It might be the CEO, it might be the regulator, and we had multiple stakeholders in each. And then we said for each one what the student could be. And the students got to choose which scenario, which stakeholder, and who they're representing. And what they had to do, they were given the scenario, they had to go in and research the scenario, do some analysis, come up with insights and make a recommendation to that stakeholder in that particular case study. And so they come up against the AI and they give it their recommendations. The AI now reacts like that person in real life and starts asking questions. What do you mean by that? Or why should I do that? That's going to make me look bad. What they get out of this is quite amazing because they're learning a real skill and not just regurgitating bloody bookwork. They're learning how to deal with real stakeholders. They're learning how to put it in their own words. And the more they're asked questions by the AI, the more they have to internalize and put the connections in their brain to make that work. So we found that students that did that in the assignment did better in the exam. It had forced them outside of what their comfort zone. They thought they understand certain things until the AI asked them a question that they didn't immediately know how to answer. And that forced them to connect some things that wouldn't have happened otherwise. So later, when they got to the exam, they did better because they understood the subject better. Students, I this week gave a prompt to the students. I said, I was teaching them the what, so what, now what framework for actionable insights. The what is, what did you find? The so what is, why should it matter to you? And the now what is, what should you do about it? For undergraduates, that's a newish thing for them to do. They're used to doing more bookworky questions. And so I said, look, I'm going to give you a prompt. You can just give it to the AI. Here's what you put, and then you put your insight down here, how you would communicate it, and it gives them feedback. Did you miss this step, or was this step unclear? How could you do it better? And this is a safe way for them to practice. So the students that actually care about getting a decent grade, and not all of them do, a C is a degree, one told me. This is not actuarial students. They're all obsessive, compulsive. But the ones that do care are going to practice with this and get it right because they're getting immediate feedback on whether their communication is following this right. I'm going to skip over that one and get into this one. Right, now your turn to practice some stakeholder communication with an AI. You're a general insurance actuary working for a workers' compensation insurer. You've been sent off to visit the OH&S manager at a factory. He's been doing a ton of work to improve the safety practices in the factory, and he's managed to cut the number of incidents in the last year, but the insurer's put the premium up, and you've been sent to explain to him why the premium went up. Let's see what the AI thinks of your explanation and how you deal with this OH&S manager's objections. Oh, we've locked people in the room, apparently. You can't get out. There we go. I set this up. I tried this. And the next thing I knew, the AI stakeholder was rather upset with me. You're not listening to me, he's saying. I fixed all this. Where do I get the benefit of this? Why are you not showing me any respect for what I've already done? I've done this once before, and the AI stakeholder, one of the people I did it with, was telling me the AI stakeholder was being rude to them about it. And they must have been fairly extreme, because I've got commands in there that the manager's supposed to act professionally whenever possible. So to get him upset, they must have said something particularly off track or accidentally insulting. I particularly find this one fun and a good learning experience because it's just like real life. I don't know how many times I've been sent off to tell an intermediary or a customer that we've got a decision that they don't like and I've got to try and sell it to them. Well, we've got some raised eyebrows. We've got some giggles. Apparently the stakeholders are reacting in a way you didn't quite want. Employers often complain about the lack of good people skills, communication skills, and business skills of our graduates. Running our graduates through stuff like this, even later on in the Actuaries Institute, we're going to produce people that are far more valuable to a business when they've had safe practice like this. It's so much safer for an AI to tell them off than an actual customer. Yeah. I once had a customer who was so upset with what I had to tell him, and I had no choice, that he threatened to call my boss and get me sacked. he did have an inflated idea of how important he was as a customer. But I've set up this AI stakeholder to be reasonable. So if you approach this the right way, you can get them on side. It's no point giving people a learning challenge that's impossible.
Oh, and I was very rude in my response to that. Eric thought it behaved. Too nice.
That's because I instructed it to be. Yeah, I sort of gave it Amanda's personality. She's always so relaxed and bloody calm, even when she deals with me and I'm being annoying. You can see the AI knows enough to behave like a real person would, particularly given I've given it enough context so that it understands the mindset and the background of that person. Yeah, someone's shaking their head. How the hell do I get this damn stakeholder on? You probably will have to do a few rounds, which we don't have time for today. You can come back to this later. It'll let you do that. Learning works so much better when you're motivated and having fun. That's my experience. I hate listening to someone drone on. When I did my master's degree, I had a lecturer and I was doing applied statistics, but my bloody lecturer came from a pure math background and turned everything into algebra and calculus, abstract algebra and calculus. And one time I chose a subject just because I knew he wasn't the lecturer. And 4 weeks in, the lecturer announced that he was leaving and was getting replaced by this guy, who then substituted the syllabus for his obscure research topic instead of the thing I wanted to learn. Thank goodness I got through that. All right, I'm going to move on because we've got a limited amount of time here and I do want to leave some time for questions. What about assessments and cheating? Yeah, what can we do about that? Can we do anything about it? AI is the new C-level work. That's a quote from a book I read. Personally, I don't even think it's a C. It's at least a B. One of the things when I talk to people having dealt with students is I wish they would use AI to cheat. At least their answers would be half right. It's pretty obvious. Although I've got to say some things we learned from this semester at Actuaries Institute, we had a whole bunch of people use AI to answer a question and they're so bad at using it, they forgot to say which industry it was and it gave a bunch of, I can't remember which way around it was, life insurance regulations when it was a general insurance question or vice versa. I cannot remember. So sometimes when students use AI, they're even worse. But I got to say, in general, I wish they would use some AI. It might improve their answers. There's a paper out there where they used AI on a Harvard exam, or a bunch of Harvard exams, and it earned a 3.34 grade point average. That's pretty damn good. AI is not as dodgy as you would think. You get all these scare stories about hallucinations, and yes, hallucinations exist, but they're mostly the result of bad prompt engineering. If you do things right, you're going to have very few hallucinations. What are we going to do if AI, if you can get a really good grade without putting any effort in? We have to change the way we do things. Can we just detect AI? Hell no. It's almost impossible to detect in reality, and there's too many false positives. This semester, in the subject I taught, we flagged two students as cheating off one another because they had a whole bunch of phrases that were identical. Now, it turns out they'd never met or been in contact in their life, but the way the question was worded, there was a limited number of possible answers. They'd done it in bullet form and got ChatGPT to turn their bullet form into prose. ChatGPT turned their bullet forms into the same phrases. So they hadn't cheated. And it was obvious from the rest of their assignment that they hadn't cheated because there were very different answers elsewhere. But, yeah, that's what had happened. You're going to get these false positives, and it's unfair to falsely penalise people. On top of that, the research shows that if they're not from English is not their first language, it is much more likely to give a false positive. And if they're neurodivergent, that's a hell of a lot of actuaries, it's more likely to give a false positive. So forget about it. There's a bunch of assessment styles that are dead. The whole knowledge and comprehension, just memorize this and regurgitate it to me, that's dead. It's a waste of time, particularly as an assignment. It's so easy to answer that with AI without ever internalizing an iota of it. What about closed book handwritten exams? Mike and I have had chats about that. My problem is I so rarely handwrite now, I'd have to go back to practicing my handwriting to do it. Universities hate it because during COVID, they discovered that if they didn't have invigilated exams in person, they saved a ton of money. And the Actuaries Institute, for the same reason, doesn't want to do it because it costs too much money, which would make the exam fees too high. It would capture things, but it's still not that practical a solution. What about live interview questions? There is some opportunity there. Now, since I wrote this, my notes behind this say it's not practical, but since I wrote this, I literally joined a project to build an AI and a system that does this at Uni of New South Wales. It is possible to do some of this and make it live. So after they hand in their assignment, they immediately have to go online and answer an AI that's asking them questions that aren't even just generic. They're specifically about what they wrote in their assignment. So if they just wrote that and paid no attention, they're not going to be able to answer live questions about that content, what they wrote and why they wrote it. So another idea, and this is one of my favourites, is you just say, I'm expecting you to use AI. It's now part of the assignment. Here's the question. First part, answer it using just AI. Show me your prompt. Show me the AI answer. Now, improve on that. And explain how you improved on that and why it's an improvement. That teaches them critical thinking and makes them internalize. You might have to make things more difficult. You certainly will. Just forget about memorization stuff. Some of the unis out there now have guidelines. Sydney Uni just gave up and just said use AI whenever. There's certain types of assessment I advise the students not to do with an AI, such as reflection, which is what we call a conformative assessment, basically forcing them to think about things and write what they thought. But anyway, you can't stop it. You can give them guidance. There's a few bits of there, different levels for different types of things. You can't enforce it, so I forget about that. All right, last slide. We've had over time challenge after challenge after challenge. I've mentioned the calculator one. Late in the 20th century, we started having Excel and spreadsheets. Was that cheating? No, it's literally now part of the subject. We expect it. The same thing should be happening with AI. It just should be part of our education. We should learn how to use it. We should learn to use it the right way, and it should make us more productive. So I'm relatively positive as long as we adapt to how we do this. We can't keep teaching the way we used to and expect to get good results out of this. So basically my conclusion is more positive than many, but we have to get off our asses and do something about it to make that work.
Thanks, Colin. We don't have any questions on the, as it's come through electronic means, but anybody would like to ask questions? Would you mind speaking into the microphone because it's recorded?
Sure. Thanks, Colin. That was a fantastic session. It feels a bit, though, like we're chasing our tails here a bit because you've got the point where you're effectively assessing a student's ability to create prompts and getting a result out of that. The next thing I'd imagine is you then have the unis assessing the results using AI.
We're not at that stage. I've trialed that. It's horrible. There's certain things you can assess it reliably and a bunch of things you can't. Yeah.
I guess then...
It'll improve over time, though.
Yes, exactly. It's moving quickly. And the next possibility is, will students use AI to generate the prompts? So
I already do.
Yeah.
What I do like, though, to do that, you still have to think things through. And the real human skill here comes back to deconstructing a problem. I know you work in software. One of the reasons I think that actuaries struggle with programming is they haven't learned to break down problems into the right structure. And learning to code, which I did at one of your companies at one point of time, or learning to decode properly, changed the way I think. They're going to have to do the same with prompting. You get much better results when you write a much better prompt. Now, I've written my own tools that help me write better prompts, but it doesn't automate it. It literally comes back to me and says, you forgot to define this. What is it you want here? What is it you want over there? That makes me think things through. So I'm learning to think better the same way that Microsoft Word is teaching me to spell better, because it gives me instant feedback when I spell the wrong way. So I'm still a bit positive about this. The ultimate skill is to ask the right question, not to come up with the right answer. And we need to move our assessments to how someone asked the right question and approached it, rather than just did they get the answer. And the problem at the moment is we're too focused on the answer. Did they get the answer right? So the students think the answer is what matters, and just try and automate that away with AI. We're going to have to assess the process.
I agree. And I guess the other piece is helping the student assess the responses that AI has produced.
Yes.
Not just put them down on the piece of paper.
Yeah. So one of the things, the working group I'm on, so we're doing, we want to have AI-powered oral assessments. And one of the, it surprisingly came from one of the engineers. He says, make sure every time you do this, it's compulsory that we let the student at the end have their own free-form say over the process that they just went through. Just in case the AI went off track, asked them the wrong questions, or something else went wrong, give them the chance to have their say and justify where they're at, and give them that dignity of being a human and not merely a cog in a machine, and assess that.
We've got time for another question. Yes, please. Could you go to the microphone? Thank you.
Thank you for the amazing presentation. I was just wondering, if we look at the chart you got there, you mentioned the log tables, the calculators, the spreadsheets, and the newer students and actuaries these days have to essentially skip using all of that.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, but
if
isn't there...
skip life and other contingencies, it'd be even better.
But isn't there, just to play devil's advocate, isn't there something lost in understanding first principles there? Especially as the AIs get better and better and
There are times when it matters and there's times when it doesn't matter. I don't need to understand log tables or even logarithms to be an actuary. I do need to understand how to turn a problem into a mathematical problem. One of the things I did love about that horrible pure maths lecturer in when I did my master's, he showed us some software that does calculus and algebra for you, because I'd forgotten most of the calculus from high school. Now, despite the fact I'd forgotten most of my calculus, I was still more than adequate at solving problems with maths. We don't have to have those basics if they don't change the concept of the problem you are solving, if they're the mechanics rather than the concept. The other thing is that what matters more than memorizing concepts is that we are motivated and curious. So I wrote a blog last week on LinkedIn. Please have a read if you haven't seen it. 30 years ago, I just sat down at a piano and wrote a jazz piece. I didn't understand any of the theory of what I did. It was just in my head. Because I wrote that and didn't understand it, I was curious. Why? That doesn't make any sense to me. Why is that the note there? And I'm still, by the way, still figuring that out. So sometimes jumping to the complex part and getting and either getting it right or getting it wrong, but the why matters. Yep. And you learn because you're motivated. But why does that work? I just did something at work, but why? And why did it not work this other time? It doesn't have to be piled up like the way you build a pyramid. It can be reversed. There are times when one works better than another. But are you examining abstract knowledge, or are you examining and teaching ability to solve a problem? They're different things.
Thank you, Colin. It's just we've run out of time, so a great session. If you could all please give Colin a round of applause. And you do need the log function, because it's the inverse of the exponential function for continuous growth. Thank you.